Good morning. Today's scripture reading comes from Job chapter 42, verses 1 through 6, and I'll be reading from the Message. I'm convinced you can do anything and everything. Nothing and no one can upset your plans. You ask, who is muddying the water, ignorantly confusing the issue, second-guessing my purposes? I admit it. I was the one. I babbled on about things far beyond me, made small talk about wonders way over my head. You told me, listen, and let me do the talking. Let me ask the questions. You give the answers. I admit I once lived by rumors of you. Now I have it all firsthand from my own eyes and ears. I'm sorry. Forgive me. I'll never do that again, I promise. I'll never again live on crusts of hearsay and crumbs of rumor. The word of God for the people of God.
Thanks be to God. You may be seated. Well, thanks, Pastor Faye, for telling everybody that Ed's preaching next week. I saw like 12 people head to the door say, we'll just come back next week because we'd rather hear him anyway. But we are still in our series on Job, and we're going to start today by talking about explorers. Now, when I think of the word explorer, I think of someone who travels into the unknown, who goes out to map uncharted waters or uncharted territory, who goes and risks their life not knowing what to expect. And I guess if you're a Star Trek fan, you'll know that explorers boldly go where no man has gone before. That's right. As I think of explorers, I think of explorers like Columbus, 1492, sailed the ocean blue, found the new world where we live today. I think of Sir Walter Raleigh, who heard about the new world, traveled to the new world, actually made a second trip to the new world, looking for that mythical golden city, El Dorado. I think of Lewis and Clark, who after the United States made the Louisiana Purchase, were sent to explore this vast, wondrous land that we now know as the western part of the United States. And I think of all that they encountered. And they journaled as they traveled. And they charted maps as they traveled. And the purpose was not just to explore and investigate, but to leave a record, to leave a journal so that anyone who followed them would at least have an idea of what to expect and what to plan for as our country expanded westward. And as I look at the book of Job that we've been working our way through this series called Broken, it in a way is like an explorer's journal. Because Job has charted in some pretty deep and uncharted, unknown territory when it comes to the issue of pain and suffering and brokenness in life. And we are fortunate enough to have his account, to have his record. And while we may not travel the exact same journey, there is a record there that we can read about. We can learn from some of his experiences that may be similar to some of our experiences. Now, this is the fourth week in this series. If you've been listening to the sermons or attending church, you know the story of Job. But just in case there's anybody out there who hasn't, let's summarize it real quickly. Job is a wealthy, prosperous, godly man. In fact, he is so faithful to God, God even brags about him to Satan. And Satan says, well, the only reason that Job is being faithful to you is because things are going so well. If you took away his wealth, if you took away all his blessings, he would curse you to your face. So God allows Satan to attack Job. And within a short period of time, he loses his family, his home, his wealth. In fact, we find Job sitting in a heap of ashes, covered from head to toe with sores on his body, and receiving the following advice from his wife: why don't you just curse God and die? But Job doesn't curse God, but what Job does do is he questions God. He begins to ask questions about God. And as he spews forth verbally these questions, he's got some friends, three friends that have come to comfort him, to sit with him. And as he begins to ask these questions, they begin to respond with their answers. Mind you, not God's answers, but their answers, and try to explain what is going on. We can read about their responses in the book of Job. And as I said, in a way, it's kind of like an explorer's journal because they have ventured into unknown territory, unknown and risky territory. Now, what's clear when you read about these accounts is Job's three friends believe in what we call retribution theology. Retribution theology, summed up simply, is you get what you deserve. So if bad things are happening to you, it's because you've done something bad and deserve it. If God is allowing bad things to happen to you, retribution theology would say you've offended God, you have sinned against God, and God is just getting even with you. Job's friends believe in retribution theology. Therefore, they're entering uncharted and risky territory, unknown, uncharted territory, because they've got to wrestle with the problem as why is this happening to Job? I mean, he is blameless. He is righteous. Certainly compared to anyone else, he's a better man. So why are bad things happening to this good person is unknown territory for them. But it also is risky territory, because if you truly believe in retribution theology and God's going to get even with you, then what is God going to do when you question him? Doesn't that mean he's just going to get even worse in what he does to you because you dare question why he's doing these bad things in the first place? But for Job, this is unknown territory as well. Job has lived a pretty blessed life. Things have gone really well for him. All he's done is experience God's blessings and in turn give honor and praise and thanksgiving back to God. And now, all of a sudden, his family's gone. His home is gone. His wealth is gone. All of this has disappeared, and for Job, it's unknown. It's unfamiliar. And he has two really big burning questions. You can lump all of his questions together. And the first of those questions that Job asks in his unknown territory is, why is this happening to me? And if we're honest, we've all asked that at times in our life as well. Why is this happening to me? Job, time and time again, wrestles with the fact that he can't think of anything he's done to deserve such calamity. And I'm sure at times he played that comparison game. Well, I'm not near as bad as, name anybody. Why is this happening to me and not to them? So his first question is, why is this happening to me? I haven't done anything to deserve it. And a second question really comes out of that is, who? Who is God that he would allow this to happen to me? I mean, Job was a righteous man. He did nothing but honor, praise, and offer sacrifices to God. In fact, he was so upright and blameless and cared so much for his family, he offered sacrifices on behalf of his children in case they had committed unatoned sin. He wanted to make sure they were covered as well. Job is asking these questions. Why is this happening? And who is God that he would allow this to happen to me? What's interesting is we read about this for many chapters in the book of Job, and God remains silent. But finally, we get to chapter 38, and after a long absence, God finally responds to Job and his friends who are asking why and who. And in his response, God doesn't give answers. Instead, in the same vein that Job and his friends have been asking questions, God turns the table and he begins to ask them questions as well. Now, in chapters 38 through 41, we actually have two speeches from God. There's one speech, a short interlude where Job responds, and then there's a second speech. And in these two speeches, God asserts three undeniable truths about himself. The first thing God says is, I am omnipresent. He's citing his omnipresence, meaning God has always existed. He has always been around from the very beginnings of the earth. Now, as I said, God's response is not an answer. God's response is to turn tables and ask questions. So in chapter 38, beginning with verse 4, here is how God asks questions of Job. Where were you when I laid the earth's foundation? Tell me, if you understand. Who marked off its dimensions? Surely you know. Who stretched a measuring line across it? On what were its footings set? Or who laid its cornerstone while the morning stars sang together and the angels shouted for joy? God is saying, I was around at the beginning. I laid the foundation of this world. I am the architect who designed it. I am the builder who built it. And I am the one who put everything into motion. By the way, Job, where were you? You weren't around. You didn't create any of this stuff. I am the God who has always been present. That's the first truth that God asserts. But then he asserts a second truth, and that is his omniscience, meaning God is all-knowing. He is omniscient. Once again, in chapter 38, he asks some questions of Job. Have you journeyed to the springs of the sea or walked in the recesses of the deep? Have the gates of death been shown to you? Have you seen the gates of the deepest darkness? Have you comprehended the vast expanses of the earth? Tell me if you know all this. God is saying, not only have I always been around, but I know everything about this universe and creation. I know how it's put together. What about you, Job? Do you know it all? You want some answers? Well, let me tell you something. I got some answers to some questions you haven't even thought of yet. Because I am God, and I am all-knowing, and I am so far beyond your comprehension. But there's a third truth that God asserts as well, and that's his omnipotence. God is all-powerful. He is omnipotent. And once again, he shows Job this by talking about his mastery over the universe. Once again, in chapter 38, can you raise your voice to the clouds and cover yourself with a flood of water? Do you send the lightning bolts on their way? Do they report to you, here we are? God is saying, I control the rain. I control the thunder and the lightning. And God goes on in this speech and talks about all the power that he has over the universe. God asserts in his response three important, undeniable truths about himself to Job. Now, I guess we could ask, in his response, does God answer Job's questions? No. Not directly. Directly, he doesn't answer one question Job asked. However, in a similar way as when Christopher Columbus set sail to find a trade route to India and found a whole new world, instead of answering a specific question, God is showing Job a whole new world here. He says, you want answers to these questions, but let me tell you, here's the real answer. here it is laid out before you. This is how vast and powerful and all-knowing I really am. And you want to know just what's happening to you in this one slice of time in your life? Oh, God's saying, I am so much bigger than that. Now, in a sense, Job and his friends are getting a pretty good verbal beatdown here. I mean, God's given it to them because he's pretty much accusing them of what I call vending machine theology. You know a vending machine, right? You put change in, you look at the lever, you decide what you want, you pull it, and you get what you expect. And that's exactly what Job and his friends are wanting here. They think the world works. If you put enough change in, you get to choose the lever to pull, and then you get what you want out of it. Nothing more and nothing less. And God is saying, it doesn't work that way. In fact, God is asserting a truth that my mother told me when I was young, which is, the whole world doesn't revolve around you. Yeah, how many people got that when they were kids? Yeah, my mom's favorite phrase, by the way. God is saying this world doesn't always work the way you think it should work. It's not always going to turn out the way you think is fair or the way that you think is right. You could really pretty much sum up God's response to Job and his friends in this manner. God is saying, I'm God, you're not. But what amazes me about the person of Job, and it amazes me every time I read his story, is despite the fact he didn't get one of his questions truly answered, directly answered, Job accepts it. In God's response, Job unexpectedly finds hope. He finds something to cling onto. I want to go ahead and reread the scripture passage that Don read a little bit earlier here. And I'm going to read portions of it, and I think it's amazing what Job says here. After God responds, Job says, I'm convinced you can do anything and everything. Nothing and no one can upset your plans. You asked, who is this muddying the water, ignorantly confusing the issue, second-guessing my purposes? I admit it, I am the one. I babbled on about things far beyond me. But then I love what he says later. He says, I admit I once lived by rumors of you. Now I have it all firsthand from my own eyes and ears. I'm sorry, forgive me. I'll never do that again, I promise. I'll never again live on the crust of hearsay, crumbs of rumors. The Hebrew word that Eugene Peterson translates as rumors there is a word that means report, or in a courtroom, hearsay. In other words, you've heard a report from somebody else, but you don't know it for sure. You haven't seen it with your own eyes or heard it with your own ears. And Job is saying, after listening to his friends babble on and on again, trying to tell him how God really works, he's saying, I'm not going to listen to that anymore. I'm not going to listen to hearsay and put my faith and trust in that. I'm going to put my faith and trust in what I can see with my very own eyes. Now, I've often thought of some of the reports of those early explorers like Lewis and Clark as they traveled the western part of the United States and they encountered animals and events and things that no English-speaking person had probably ever seen. And they were the first, I understand, to see the coyote and the prairie dog. And how do you explain that on a piece of paper? I mean, even if you draw a picture, right, you can't fully explain what they're like. How would you explain the vast herds of buffalo on the plains of Kansas, that even today I don't think we can fully grasp how numerous they really were? How do you explain the rivers and the forests that you see, or the mountains out west? How do you fully explain? Oh, you can write a journal, but your report is always going to be a little bit inaccurate. And Job is saying, I'm not going to live by reports or someone else's words. I'm going to grasp on to what I can see that is right before me. And so God has talked about the universe that he has created, the universe that he set into motion, about the stars and the sky and the mountains and the rivers and the animals and the plants. And Job is saying, you know what? I may not have full understanding, but obviously when I look at all these things, someone far beyond me created them. And despite the lack of full understanding, I'm going to put my faith and trust in the one who created all of these things. That's what I'm going to follow. Even when I'm broken and I don't understand, I'm going to choose to follow the God who created all of these things. I often wonder about that wave of explorers that followed Columbus. I mean, Columbus goes and comes back and says, I didn't find the trade route to India, but I found a whole new world. And just based on those reports and those rumors, they got in the boat. Sir Walter Raleigh comes to the new world. And you've got to just imagine, he goes, well, I've heard about this, but I don't know for sure it's there until I see it with my own eyes. And Job's going to put his faith and trust in what he sees with his own eyes. Now, I hope none of us have to travel the same journey as Job and all of the difficulties and suffering and pain and brokenness in so many ways that he experienced. But his book is a journal for us to read when we do experience brokenness in whatever way, shape, or form it comes in our life. And let's be honest, if we live on this earth long enough, we will experience some pain and suffering in many different ways. Now, I also know this, some of those may be incredible crises, some of those may seem like minor crises, but I've learned this as we've talked about people in our congregation going into the hospital, there's no such thing as minor surgery when it's on you. And there's no such thing as a small amount of brokenness when it's you, because it's very real and it's painful and you struggle with how do I navigate my way through that. And Job gives us a couple of things to hold on to. The first thing is it's not about understanding, it's about trust. Job says, I'm going to trust what I can see before me, and I'm going to trust the one who created that. Put my faith and trust in God for the things when I can't see, when I can't understand, when I am venturing into the unknown. I'm going to trust the one I know for the things that I don't. It's not about complete understanding. It's about trust. The second thing that Job gives us to hold on to, it's not about what God has done. It's about what God can do. It would have been very easy for Job to remain in the ash heap, to sit there and say, I'm just going to curse God and die. It takes courage to get up and face what's before you, even when it's an unknown. It takes a risk to say, I'm not going to remain and wallow in my self-pity and always blame what's happened to me so you'll never have a better future ahead. Job teaches us that the one that created the world, the mountains, the stars, the thunder, the lightning, the oceans, the plants, the animals, the one who created all this has enough power to get us out of our ash heap, out of our brokenness, and put us back together and show us a whole new world. A world that we thought may have never been possible. A life that goes beyond anything that we could ever imagine as we sat in the ash heap. There's a movie about Queen Elizabeth called Elizabeth the Golden Age. And in that movie, Sir Walter Raleigh comes before the Queen and he talks about the perils and the dangers of traveling on the open sea. And in it, he talks about what is necessary to make sure you make it to your destination. And he says, you've got to study the maps. You've got to trust your compass. You got to be willing to battle the suffering and the difficulties in life. But most importantly, you've got to keep your eyes fixed on the horizon and hold on to hope.
Can you imagine what it is to cross an ocean? For weeks you see nothing but the horizon, perfect and empty. You live in the grip of fear. Fear of storms, fear of sickness on board, fear of the immensity. So you must drive that fear down deep into your belly. Study your charts. Watch your compass. Pray for a fair wind and hope. Pure, naked, fragile. Hope.
Majesty, the Archduke and the court are waiting.
Let them wait. Go on, Mr. Raleigh. You were hoping?
At first, it's no more than a haze on the horizon. So you watch. You watch. Then it's a smudge. A shadow on the far water. For a day, for another day, the stain slowly spreads along the horizon, taking form, until on the third day, you let yourself believe. You dare to whisper the word. Land. Land. Life. Resurrection. The true adventure. Coming out of the vast unknown, out of the immensity, into new life. That, Your Majesty, is the new world.
We've all experienced brokenness in life, and some of us may be going through an incident, a situation, some brokenness right now. And as we look at the journal of Job, we have to ask ourselves, do we get up every day and do we look at the horizon? Do we grasp on to that hope that is out there? Do we put our faith and trust even amidst our questions of why, even amidst our lack of understanding, do we put our faith and trust in the one who can guide and will guide and lead us to a new world, a new life? At the beginning of this series, we handed out pieces of glass, and we asked you to take those as a reminder of some brokenness in your life. And we invited you then, when you experience victory over that brokenness, to bring it back. And we've already had one piece of glass brought back today as someone who has overcome brokenness in their life and has started to feel that mending. And I tell you today that if we put our hope in God and look to the horizon, it may seem like we'll never be mended again. But I tell you, with proper faith and trust in God, we'll see on that horizon that smidge, that speck, that shadow that God wants to lead us to. And through the power of Jesus Christ, one day we'll be able to say, land, life, resurrection. The key is to keep our trust in God and trust our charts, trust our compass, obey what He has called us, the way He has called us to live. Jack is going to come and lead us in a closing hymn, Trust and Obey. And that's what we need to do while we stand on that deck and we look to the horizon. And if you need to come up and share something with God at the altar today, or you need Pastor Faye and I to pray with you, or you've got a piece of glass, an area of brokenness that you want to either put on the altar because you found victory, or you want to pray over at the altar, we'd be more than happy to do that. Let's stand and let's put our trust in our faith, in our obedience, in the God who has called us to a new world.